Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 51. Hope you all enjoyed last week's live show with many, many mistakes because I couldn't edit any of it. But this week it's all about our interview with Jay Mercado, who's an Industrial Light and Magic hard surface modeler who's worked on all three of the new Star Wars films that are out and coming out, I guess. As always, I am Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Danya.
Back in the land of edit. Instead of the land of live. Mikey makes very many mistakes. But we still love him.
Just tell everyone. editing is magical. Anyway, we also have Ben with us today. How you doing today, Ben?
Good. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah. You have to think about that.
How am I today? A little reflective inside. Also, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. We launched Patreon last week. Definitely make sure you checked it out, resistanceradio.net/Patreon. There are some really cool perks, including Discord chat, where you can join our recording studio, which we're using right now to record this episode, and you could be a fly on the wall in this recording studio. Even type to us and help influence each episode. We'll also have movie nights and some After Dark episodes. What do you think about that, Danya?
I'm super excited about it, particularly the After Dark episodes.
Oh, boy. Isn't it always After Dark for you?
It's always After Dark for Donnie. You're right. It's true.
It is. It's so true. Though slightly not as After Dark, because you guys, the clocks have changed for you guys already, but not for us. True. So it's slightly earlier for me tonight, which...
Wow. That's good.
I know. So by the time we finish up tonight, it's not going to be gone midnight, which is a novelty for me.
So that's why you were like, I'm all by myself in here. You were totally trying to figure out the time zone change and all that stuff. And you're like, I'm all by myself in here.
Oh, did you get out an hour early?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, no.
I've maybe been hanging around in the Discord like all afternoon.
Just
though,
like
to be fair.
Doing what you do. Yeah, that's
fine. Yeah, singing all by myself in the chat room. And
I saw that. It's all right.
That was me this morning, to be fair.
I know. Yes, it was you. Also, beyond Patreon, we also have merchandise for sale. Feel free to take a look at our t-shirts and button packs available on our website. I think it's time for the news. So, first bit of news. I don't know if we talked about it last week. We may have, but we may have just passed it. It's about Star Wars Celebration, which is coming up in Florida this year. And Celebration is not going to happen in 2018. It's going to return in 2019. So, the last couple of years, Celebration has been happening every year. I guess the last 3 years now?
Something like that.
Yeah, so they're going to take a break during 2018. And this is actually not something that surprises me.
I would say I don't find it that surprising either, because previously the gaps between celebrations was like a good couple of years, sometimes up to 5.
Yeah,
right?
5 years or something. Sometimes even more than that, because the celebrations, like the very first celebration, so I was at the first 3 Star Wars celebrations, which were all related to the prequel releases. And then the fourth one was, I was at the fourth one, but I didn't spend all the time there because I was doing MuggleCast at the time. But the fourth one was in LA, so down the street from me. And it happened during the same time as the Order of Phoenix premiere. So I was in LA for that, obviously, because that's where I lived, and it was at the Order of the Phoenix premiere, but that's when Star Wars Celebration 4 took place. And that was for the 25th anniversary. 30th anniversary of a new
one? It would have been 30th if it was 07.
Yeah, so it would have been the 30th anniversary. See, I don't know how to do math. Thank you for the math, piano boy.
Well, 77 plus 30 would be 07 if you're talking...
107. So 77 plus 30 is 107, not 07. But I got what you were trying to do for this.
Yo, look at us go. We're so good at this.
This is not a podcast of math. The podcast is starting.
No.
Anyway, but yeah, so they've been doing all the celebrations were really for each film coming out. And with a new Star Wars film coming out every year, it definitely makes sense that it's kind of difficult for them to be able to maintain the attendance and the excitement around Star Wars Celebration if they do it every single year. So, especially with the stuff that happens at Comic-Con and all the other fan events that happen in between celebrations. So,
yeah. I'd also say that there's a huge amount of expectation now on Celebration to have the current actors showing up. And I feel as though as production ramps up, not only on the saga films, but also the stories that are taking place in between those films, it's a huge commitment to have them tied to Star Wars so heavily when they're basically on all the time. They essentially come out of one film, particularly the actors working on the saga films, and go immediately, or almost, or near as damn it, immediately into production on the next, where it's also very difficult for them because they might want to take up other projects, which, you know, in respect to, like, John Boyega, for example, he's doing the next Pacific Rim film. He's also going to be coming back to the West End. I'm seeing him next month in a play. So, you know, he has a lot of things that he's doing or wanting to do outside of that. So the idea of feeling very beholden to Star Wars as well and having something like a convention that you're contractually obliged to do pretty much every single year isn't something that's going to be easy for them. Not so difficult when it was Celebration Europe, because the studios are around the corner, so even if they are on set, not too much of a stretch to take them off for like a couple of days or a couple of hours to just show their face and then go back to set. But when it's back out in the States, when the primary filming is done either within London itself or across parts of Europe or the Mediterranean in some filming parts as well, it's a lot more difficult to try and sort that out. So I feel like it gives them slightly more freedom in respect to scheduling around other commitments for those actors as well, and gives them that freedom away from it, because it's very clear that they all love Star Wars and they love working on Star Wars, but when you are tied into a franchise where you live and breathe it, and that's all you get to do creatively, it can sometimes sap all of your love for that thing as well. So it's good that they'll be able to have more time away, particularly in like their off time when they're between filming, to be able to fully explore other things as well without having to worry about trying to schedule in a convention.
This also makes me wonder if they're going to try to keep Star Wars Celebration with the saga films. You know, we have this year, which again is going to coincide with, you know, The Last Jedi episode 8. And then, you know, 2019 will coincide with episode 9.
And I guess,
they're going to keep the saga going?
Maybe, because Celebration Europe coincided with Rogue One. So, I don't know. Potentially. I guess maybe it made sense for them to try and coincide it with Rogue One to, like, really drum up excitement. Well,
it was also the first spin-off.
So
yeah, I was gonna say something like that, where like they had a lot riding on Rogue One because it was the first time they were gonna, you know, deviate from the saga. So they needed to be like, guess what? You should be excited about this film, and they did everything they could to push it.
Yeah.
And there was good reason to be excited about the film, because it was awesome. But we won't have a celebration next year, but we'll have it in 2 years. In 2019.
We'll celebrate.
We'll celebrate the Han Solo film on our own on this podcast, as always.
But we'll be we'll be the solo podcast that celebrates the film.
Oh, boy. Let's move on. That's bad, Ben.
It was like a two.
That's a worse than Mikey joke. Anyway, let's move on to...
Good, that's an accomplishment in my book.
Better happy news. Marvel's new Darth Vader series. So the last Darth Vader comic book series is finished. But the new Darth Vader series will see the Sith Lord's rise and even his construction of his lightsaber and much more, including how he handles dealing with his loss of Padme. So this is pretty cool because no one's really ever tackled the rise, like the beginning, the moments after Darth Vader says no, like no one's ever tackled those moments. You know, we see Rebels that tackles, you know, towards the end of, you know, 16 years after Revenge of the Sith. We have some things that happen, play, you know, a couple things that are in between, but nothing that is like right after. There's even a Lords of the Sith book that takes place probably about 5 or 6 years after Revenge of the Sith. Nothing that's right afterwards. So it's pretty. I'm excited to see how he's going to go ahead and make his lightsaber. You know, we've learned more about lightsaber lore from the Ahsoka book, that the red saber is that the kyber crystals are bleeding. I'm wondering if he's stealing these. No, he's going to steal the crystals from someone else's lightsaber to build his new one or what? Like, I'm super excited about this. What do you guys think about this new comic series?
I love the idea that it's going to basically pick up immediately after, like, after Revenge of the Sith and his first days as Vader, really. So it's, I just love that idea of really exploring that, his grief after losing Padme, reconciling with everything that he has done to bring down the Jedi Order and everything that led up to that. And Charles Soule, who is writing it, is incredible because he has done work on Poe Dameron, Obi-Wan and Anakin, and Lando, and so he has some really great titles under his belt already when it comes to the writing. So I love that he's on board with this project because he has such a good grip on the universe and the characters. So yeah, moving on to like another series where it's centered around Vader, yeah, definitely excited about it, definitely looking forward to checking it out. I'm finding myself picking up more Star Wars comics now. I used to have a lot more.
That's never a bad thing.
It isn't. No, it's not a bad thing. I found myself less enamored of standard Marvel comics recently, because they just keep doing event series after event series, and I'm not too into it, because I'm just really not that fussed at the moment over the event series and the plot lines that they're going with. So I've taken pretty much all of the Marvel comics that I would typically have on standing order, off standing order, and I've started replacing them with Star Wars comics, because I freed up the money. So, yeah, I will probably add Vader onto that, mostly because I love Charles Soule's Star Wars stuff. So, yeah.
I'll add it mostly because it's Vader, but, you know. Charles Soule's
I'm here for, like, I'm here for all of the character building and the writing and the exploration of Vader's guilt versus like everything.
That's what I'm super excited for.
And Mikey's basically like, yeah, but it's Darth Vader, so that's why I'm getting it. I'm like here, like really thinking and getting in depth and emotional about it.
Like, another thing, I guess, like, because like, yeah, it's Vader, but also like, when you think about the other times we've seen him, like in Rogue One and stuff like that, that's still like original trilogy age Vader. Like, this is because this is touching Revenge of the Sith. This is like, you know, 20-something-year-old Vader, which we've actually never seen before because, I don't know, the first time we see him after Revenge of the Sith is Rogue One at this point, for the most part.
Rebels.
And then, well, yeah, but still, that's like closer to...
It's close to...
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's like, this is so close to... Revenge of the Sith. It's kind of nice that we're also carving out the space between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. Like, we have Rogue One, which is touching A New Hope, and we have these, and I don't know if there's anything else that touches Revenge of the Sith, like, directly at the end, but now that we have this kind of, like, chasm of time that we're just filling in with all this stuff because they're like, there's 20 years there that we can do stuff with. So I'm excited that they picked to do Vader.
Yeah, it should be good. Like Donya said.
Also, I love the cover of the second issue because it looks like a big moment in a rock concert or something. Like his stance, and he's like clenching his fist, and there's an explosion, and he's just like, I don't know. He's like, I'm awesome.
Yeah. The other thing that was really interesting is when they did the announcement of like the Vader stuff and what it was going to be covering and what it was going to be about and. You know, really getting into it. Because we knew, like, I'm pretty sure we knew a Vader comic was coming, but we didn't know, like, the details of it. Like, when it was going to be set and all of that. They mentioned in the interview that they had with Charles Soule that the Inquisitors, the Inquisitor program is going to be incorporated into the Vader series as well. Basically the origins of it and how it came to be. So I'm really excited to see that, particularly because it has such strong ties into Star Wars Rebels, because it was such a huge part of Star Wars Rebels last season. So I'm super excited about that. And seeing, like, the beginnings of the Inquisitor program.
Yeah, this should be a really good series to give us some more information about that time period where we really just don't have that much. Other news that we got this week was about Legoland's Force Awakens display. Did you guys get a chance to take a look at this?
Yeah, this is legit.
So I have to admit something here. I didn't realize that Legoland was a thing outside of the UK.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't realize there was a Legoland in the US at all.
Yeah.
So the first Legoland was actually in San Diego, where this is.
Yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea there was a Legoland outside of the UK.
There's one in Orlando now, too, I think.
Yeah, there
is. Wow.
But when people think of Orlando, they think of Disney or Universal. So I think Legoland in Orlando takes like a back seat at this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Legoland is like is one of the few theme parks in San Diego. You have like Legoland and SeaWorld in San Diego. And then as you move more north in California, that's when you get Disneyland and Anaheim. And Universal in Hollywood, so it's like, and you know, Knott's Berry Farm malls. You know, so there's all these theme parks in LA, but Legoland is like one of the big things in San Diego. It's like I remember every time I went to San Diego, I'd go to Legoland with my uncle. But yeah, like these things are just amazing. Seeing like the bricktastic detail they have on these ships, and building Jakku.
You just said bricktastic.
He said bricktastic because Star Wars used it first, so
I know, but
he doesn't get any credit for that.
But it still sounds weird out loud. I think like on paper you're like, oh, that's cute, and then you say it and you're like, ugh. But I don't know.
I love Legos, okay? We talked about the Lego Force Awakens game here.
I love Legos. I'm such a nerd when it comes to Star Wars Legos, so like I'm not condemning the fact that bricktastic is a thing, but it is still kind of creative.
Ben is
a word. Ben is
Mikey coming across very cool dad right now?
Oh boy. Anyway, all right. So forget you know some of the stuff, but look at Jakku and just look at like Nima Outpost. Like this stuff is just amazing.
I know, it's just insane. Like, looking at the amount of detail that is going into this, and just all of the pictures, and just how incredible it all looks. And I kind of need them to build it in the Legoland over here, not gonna lie.
Can you, like, just think about, like, so here's the ones that really blow me. It's like the Star Destroyer, and the AT-ATs, and all those things that are buried partially under the sand and partially open, like battle damaged, like those are.
Yeah, I was about to say the TIE fighter with Finn coming out holding Poe's coat, like that.
That's so cute.
How the heck? Well, yeah, the I love that they I don't know. It's like the way they build the minifigs. It's not like a general minifigure size. They actually build with pieces, Lego. like a sort of like an abstract version that suggests the character rather than like a detail oriented one. But I love the fact that I don't know, like negative space they take up with white bricks and stuff, and they just wanted to make sure everything looks good from, I think, like if you stand a certain distance away when it kind of they all blend together, it looks amazing. But then when you zoom in on the detail, you're just like, oh my gosh, the amount of time they must have taken just to do like a wing on one of these things, you know, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I'm also super stoked that the Sisterhood of the Traveling Jacket managed to make it into this display. So,
yeah,
oh boy.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, here's the thing is, like, I've always loved going to the Lego stores, and Legoland is great here. But, like, I love that, like, you mentioned that they kind of built the characters instead of using, like, the Lego minifigures. Right. Because one of my favorite things is, like, going to the Lego store when it was in Anaheim and seeing the life-size Darth Vader built there out of Legos. Like, that was just really cool. And, like, seeing these characters actually built is just...
Oh, my gosh, wait. So I'm looking at the picture. It's sort of like an aerial view, and, like, you can see, like, the quad jumper and stuff like that. Across the way, there's a Theed Palace. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. They have this is the Star Wars mini land. Like
it's like a Star Wars mini land. That's so cool.
Yeah. So in Legoland in San Diego, there's a whole like you know there's all the different sections and stuff they built. And Star Wars has always had a presence there because it was probably one of their more popular kind of third party things that they have. And
oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, makes sense. But yeah, definitely. So in this case. This is specifically the new one, the new installation they added, which is Jakku and The Force Awakens, which
just the opening.
I will say looks amazing.
Yeah. I see they use real sand. I wonder if they hate sand at this point.
They're not Anakin. You know,
Anakin. You know, there's a little bit of Anakin in all of us.
So let's move on. But speaking about the amazing theme parks that are in California, Disneyland has tapped AI to build the droids we're looking for.
Points on that transition.
I know, right? Because we're talking about theme parks, they tie it all together, it's like magic.
That's so great. Right? Oh, it is magic. You're right.
Transition. But so here's a really cool part. So Disneyland and their Imagineer system, and Imagineers, if you will, have been working on all sorts of different types of, you know, animatronics and different things. They're, you know, it goes back to Disney Legacy, right? And they've been working with some AI to bring up Pascal from the Tangled series, you know, which is the little, is it chameleon?
It is a chameleon, right? Yes.
I haven't seen Tangled in a while, but yeah. And he is using AI, so he recognizes there's all sorts of sensors. When you pick him up, his skin moves, his eyes blink, and he opens his mouth and stuff. And he recognizes when someone actually is picking him up and holding him and moving him. And that's all done with AI. Like, he's able to do his own thing, and it's not, like, pre-programmed, but it's kind of a unique movement for each person as they do it. Well, Disney Imagineers have also built a droid called Jake, which is a droid that's been in the Star Tours ride for years, but this droid has a little bit more AI. And my favorite is a quote here from... the Disney Imagineers. So they took Jake in a 2-month stint at the Star Wars Launch Bay section in Disneyland. So if you don't know where the Launch Bay section is at Disneyland, it's in Disneyland Tomorrowland. It's the section that is all the Star Wars memorabilia, the information about the Star Wars films. You see a lot of the clothes that Rey and Finn had from Force Awakens. There's stuff from Star Wars Rogue One in there. And that's also where you do your meet and greet with Kylo Ren and the Stormtroopers and stuff like that. So this droid was just roaming around for 2 months, kind of just randomly there, meeting kids and parents. And the quote here is, "Adults are kind of interested and amazed by him, but kids just immediately assume, well, of course, droids are real. They talk to him, they want to introduce him to their parents. At this point, I am this much closer to owning a real-life R2-D2. I am so excited that they are working on AI, and this is as far as I want AI to go, is to give me my own R2-D2 robot." Like, how cool, like, you guys see the video of this? Like, it's awesome.
Yeah, I've seen the video. It's incredible. I love it. I'm just so excited about more Star Wars in the parks, because I love this idea of this immersion into the world that we've all become so familiar with. Like, we are all in love with Star Wars. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're on this podcast, you are in love with Star Wars. This is a commitment that you make, Right? So yeah. This idea of having a droid that is fully responsive, like, it is a droid, essentially, able to interact with you and you able to interact with it as well. Like, that's incredible to me. Like, yeah, adults are kind of interested and amazed by him. I'm going to be like, hell yeah, droids are real. This is the best thing to happen to me ever. This is great.
I kind of like the idea of if we're supposed to, or if there's like a looming AI apocalypse, I would love it to be Star Wars characters that take over the world. You know,
like, no Terminator style. It's just Star Wars characters.
Yeah, it's just like BB-8 just blew my house up. Like, whatever.
BB-8 just blew my house up. Well, that kind of also plays into
I feel like we that have our title whole
pre Force Awakens theory where they were like talking about BB-8 turning out to be the Sith Lord of the Force Awakens. Did you see all of those like little comics and stuff that came out before Force Awakens?
I feel like maybe. You know, like, I'm not remembering it exactly, but I feel like what you're saying rings a bell, so I feel like I've seen them already.
I'll see if I can dig it. Yeah, I'll see if I can dig it up again, because the little comic strip was incredible, where, like, they were just, like, talking about the idea that everyone had essentially seen BB-8 and, like, lost their crap over it and just had fallen in love with BB-8 immediately, and how hysterical it would be if BB-8 turned out to be like the ultimate bad guy in the new Star Wars trilogy.
But didn't they do that in like Zootopia?
I mean,
like,
yes,
didn't they make the cute one the evil one? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like,
yeah.
So, but Zootopia wasn't out at that point.
Oh, that's true. So that way, Zootopia would be stealing from Star Wars if that's the case.
Yeah.
If that actually happened. Okay. Yeah. I get it.
Anyway, back to the droids. it's so cute, though. I love it. Oh, I'm so excited for just more Star Wars in the Disney parks. Because when I went there for the first time to Disney World, that was the one thing that I loved more than anything, because it was my first experience of Disney World. I'd done Disneyland Paris a couple of times, but it's a very different experience, Disneyland Paris, because it's still very self-contained. And yes, there's some division of like the parks and the areas, but at the same time, because it's so small, you don't get that full immersion feeling sometimes for me that you do when you go somewhere like Disney World. So Disney World, for example, you have several parks that are segmented into areas and themes that you fully get this idea of what they all feel like. And they're so vast that you get lost in that completely. So my first experience of Disney World, like, full stop, was coming up to... We drove up, parked up, got over to everything, and essentially my first experience was coming in through the gates and stormtroopers being on top of the gates, like, talking to you and interacting with you and putting you in, because I went during Star Wars weekend. So, like, they had massive signs set up that had, like, the Disney characters with, like, Star Wars outfits, and, like, Mickey was Yoda, I think, that year.
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah, Mickey's Yoda, you have Goofy as Darth Vader. I have actually all the action figures for the Star Wars weekends.
I've got a couple of pins. I've got a Star Wars too. Weekends pin with Mickey and Yoda on it from that year, which I love to bits. It was the first thing that I bought in Disney World. So, but then walking through, like, that's my first experience of Disney World, was just walking straight in and basically running straight into Star Wars characters, just walking around. And obviously at that time, that was, it only happened on self-contained weekends. It didn't really spill outside of that too much. But now they've started, obviously, immersing the Star Wars universe into the parks more and more and more, to the point where we're now getting a world. So this idea that we're going to have more immersion into that is great, and I love it, and I'm so excited about all of this and just being able to interact with droids in a way that I would be able to interact with the other characters if I was in the park. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it makes Star Wars Land that much more exciting. Like, I really want to see a gonk droid, power droid, just walking through, like, the land just by itself really
like
slow.
Like, your favorite background droids from Star Wars.
Yeah, not interacting with anybody or anything. Not saying anything, but just, like, all it does all day is it walks from one side of the park to the other side of the park. It's like, womp, womp,
yeah.
Womp.
That, or, like, maybe, like, a little mouse droid comes up to you and then runs away.
Yeah, like that would be, and they could use the AI for that too. It'd be great. All right, yeah. Moving on. You know, I love theme parks, but we got a little bit last bit of news. This last bit of news is pretty interesting. I don't know if any of you guys use Reddit. I am on Reddit fairly often, but Gareth Edwards did a Star Wars themed Reddit AMA, which stands for Ask Me Anything, and one of the AMA questions was, will we ever see the Star Wars crawl from Rogue One? Because they did write it. And he actually responds, Gary Whitta actually wrote one in the first draft. You'll have to pester him for it. So he didn't want us to bug him any further about it. And he says, I do believe those opening crawl words are actually floating out there in space somewhere. So it may be something where people have those opening crawl words from Rogue One somewhere. It'd be kind of interesting to read what they would have been. Obviously, they would still tweak it, you know?
Yeah, it is. But also, I just like the idea that they nixed it and that it didn't have it.
Do we know why that happened, though? Like, was that part of maybe, like, just the re-edits of the film?
Well, the thing that he discussed at Star Wars Celebration Europe was the idea that Rogue One is the opening crawl of A New Hope, so it didn't... Right. They were trying to differentiate it, but also the fact that it is the story of the opening crawl meant that it didn't necessarily need one. So they they were trying to set it up as this idea of just being that opening crawl in film form. So, and I like that. I like that idea that it is set apart from the saga films in a way that it just slots neatly into, like, the space just before A New Hope, rather than trying to, like, emulate it too much. Like, it's still within that time frame, but I like this idea that it just... It is almost an extension of that story, just taking place slightly before and focused on a different part of the rebellion before it links up directly into impacting the moments of A New Hope. So I like that. I get that it's missing something that's very iconic to Star Wars, but I don't think it was unsuccessful. I actually
I kind of am on that boat too. Yeah, like, it didn't bother me that there wasn't a title crawl, mainly because they told us there wasn't going to be one, so I was like, okay, that's fine. But they kept the end credits, you know, were the same. They kept A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. Like, everything else was there, so, like, it did feel okay. And then the fact that they took out the title crawl, it was, like, jarring for maybe a half a second, then I was like, okay, I'm over it. So, like, clearly it wasn't a huge deal to me. And I hope other people feel that way, because, like, title crawls are supposed to be informative, but, like, if you've seen Revenge of the Sith, I feel like, or if you've watched the first 30 seconds of A New Hope, I think people are informed enough. And also the fact that Rogue One was a Star Wars movie for Star Wars fans in a huge way. I don't know if you guys felt that way about it.
Yeah, Rogue One was definitely, it was a different film. And I think without our title crawl, it did feel like, I don't know, I saw it 5 or 6 times. I can't even remember how many times I saw it in theaters.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm a big geek.
Mikey's intense.
The first time, here's the thing, is the very first time I saw it, I was so overwhelmed. I kind of left the film going like, oh, I think I said I loved the film, but I was kind of underwhelmed a little bit because it's a story I knew. The second time I saw it, and I was also probably jarred with, like I was taken aback with, like, Michael Giacchino's soundtrack versus John Williams. So, like, there were some things that, like, I was kind of like, wait, what's going on? Second time I saw it, I liked it more. And each time I saw it, I enjoyed it more and more and more as a film. And I think the first time I saw it without a title crawl, I was still kind of put off because I really wanted a title crawl. But that's me being the stubborn fanboy that I am. And going from planet to planet was kind of like, you know, jarring, if you will. But
Totally with you on that one.
The more I ended up like kind of watching it, like the more times I saw it, I realized the title cards for each planet, even though it was a little jarring, it actually was designed to help tell the story. Like, okay, you're here, and then over here, this is happening, and this is happening. Like, this is telling that story of the title crawl, because it is literally a title crawl as a film.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm also with you on the fact that, like, the second time I saw Rogue One, I liked it more. And I think it's because the first time I saw it, I was so confused because we kept hopping from planet to planet with characters we didn't know. Though we knew the story and we knew, like, the outline of what was going to happen and stuff like that, it was still kind of like, wait, I really want to get to know these people. Like, but they keep hopping from planet to planet. So the second time I saw it, it was more like, okay, I know to expect that. And so, I don't know. It was just, I think, easier to get into it the second time.
I think, yeah, I agree with you. Like, on additional watches, I enjoyed it more. And I was okay with no title crawl each additional watch.
Yeah. And look, this, the text signaling all the different planets, at least it wasn't Civil War, which had the giant letters that took up the whole screen. Every time they change location.
That's true.
That drove me a little crazy. Like, I don't mind the signifiers for, like, different locations, but it kind of, like, that drove me a little nuts.
I would have minded them if they were in a main saga film, just because we'd never had that before. But this was also the first time in a Star Wars film we had planet hopping that quickly. So...
yeah, that where we might also help justify where we it. Traveling to the, yeah, you know, I mean, like,
right. We weren't like following a certain character from planet to planet. We were like, okay, here's your main cast, and they're actually all on different planets. So we're just gonna see if you can catch up, you know? Because that's how I felt, at least. At least the first time. Because really, we get a prologue for Jyn, and that's it. The rest of it, it's like, okay, you better hop on because we're gonna go.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So, all right. I still want to read it, though. It'd still be fun to see what it says.
Oh, it'd be fun. Well, I want to see that alternate cut that Disney said, nope, let's reshoot half the movie. We're never going to see that.
I don't think there's an alternate cut. I think there was just alternate things.
No, Gareth Edwards actually discussed this in the Reddit AMA as well, in a couple of other little... There's been lots of snippets that have come out from this AMA chat that he did on Reddit, and essentially what he said is that the only thing that was significantly changed in editing was the end sequence where the tower where the plans were initially was the other side of the beach, so where they had to get the plans from and then two in the tower to transmit them out were in two separate locations, in two separate buildings, where they had to run along the beach initially to get to the tower to transmit the plans. But what they found was when they were getting through filming and showing it and testing it and watching it back, it dragged the film out. And it didn't feel right. It slowed it down. It felt really sluggish and it didn't really work. So they recut it and refilmed parts of it so that the sequence essentially meant that it was all in the same building, which is why when we had trailers, we had a lot more shots on the beach of like the main characters on the beach. So that was the most significant change that he touched on in the Reddit AMA. He said everything else was so minimal within scenes to just shift them slightly that it didn't. There isn't anything to release as a deleted scene because they didn't delete scenes; they just subtly changed them. So nothing fundamentally was removed and changed. It was very small reshoots.
That's interesting because it was still enough for them to hire a different composer.
Well, yeah, but
you know,
he also talked about that as well in the Reddit AMA. Not the because in the Reddit AMA they made it sound like they knew really early on that John Williams wasn't going to be doing the score.
Oh no, I meant like they. Alexander Desplat couldn't do it, so they had Michael Giacchino come on.
Yeah, but they changed yeah. that. What ends up happening with scoring? Scoring is one of the should happen once you have what they call pitcher lock. That way, big motifs and hits can happen right as the explosion happens and stuff like that. And with them shifting things around and making changes nonstop to editing, it's definitely difficult for someone to come back who's scored it to go back and make changes if they don't have the time. So when they went back and did reshoots to not necessarily change the story or do a completely different cut, but to kind of fix certain pacings, which is what I said was probably the actual issue originally. I've seen this stuff before. Alexander Desplat was not available to go back and do those, so they just ended up getting someone else to score it, which makes sense. Like, you know, it's what it is.
I mean, it is a very, very rare occasion if you see that a film is going through reshoots or it is announced that a film is doing reshoots. Never assume that they are scrapping huge segments of film and just redoing huge sections. Reshoots typically, as Mikey said, is to fix pacing issues. So they don't tend to fundamentally change the film. They're making minor tweaks to, I guess, almost just polish it. So a lot of the time reshoots are just there to make it the best version of what they already have. There are very rare instances where they will scrap huge segments of film and reshoot, but those tend to be incredibly expensive reshoots. I would say about 90% of the time when they say, oh, we're doing reshoots, that mostly they're just pickups. Like, they're just cold reshoots. So I'm never that concerned when it's reported on. So I wasn't that shocked reading through the Reddit stuff and seeing that he was just saying, like, there's no way to actually release deleted scenes the way that you would want them because we didn't really delete whole scenes. We just adjusted for pacing.
Yeah, and that... And honestly, if you see, I think the special feature of him talking about making Rogue One, one of the things he said, and I don't think it was in the AMA, it was something else before that, you know, he mentioned that he just went out and he had like a 3D version of some of the scenes already in beforehand, and he kind of went out there and he just started filming, which is a very unique style of filming, especially like a big blockbuster film like Star Wars. But it makes sense, like, not having a bunch of deleted scenes, but like alternate takes and stuff like that, that really people aren't going to be interested if someone took an extra step to the left or an extra step to the right or delivered a line differently. It's not really a deleted scene like we're used to, where they have a scene in the film and then it just doesn't work and they cut it out. In this case, the scene of going to the tower to, you know, transmit the plans is there, but the difference is they simply just adjusted and shifted things around so that the pacing was better. So you still have that scene, if that makes sense. So.
Yeah.
But it would still be cool, you know, to see, you know, the, you know, title crawl words. Anyway, moving on to Rebels so we can get on to our interview. I want to talk about the Double Agent Droid. It's interesting. This is actually one of my favorite episodes this season, even though it's a AKA filler episode. I'm a little sad that Dave Filoni even referred to it as a, people are going to refer to this as a filler episode, but it really wasn't. It was probably one of the better episodes this season, mainly because of AP5. I'm sorry. I love AP5 now. He's like,
no, I love AP5. AP5 was basically me in this episode.
You know what? Actually, I actually was going to say, I could see you kind of floating around in space. It's like, no, don't rescue me. I could see you, Donnie, just be like, it's silence. No Twitter, no Facebook, no nothing. Just,
No, that bit, I see that being you.
Like, just eventually, like, sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, I do go on social media blackouts sometimes if it gets too much, but mostly it was the snark, I will admit, the deadpan wit, and also the exasperation of why is nobody listening to me?
Well, because it's AP5. Anyway, let's start off real quick. So this episode starts off with Wedge, AP5, and Chopper going on a secret mission, which is awesome because they feature Wedge Antilles,
who was largely ineffectual.
You know what? It's showing how important he is to the Rebel Alliance, Danya.
No. Wedge was sent on this mission with Chopper and AP5 because no one else wanted to go on the mission with Chopper and AP5. No, because Zeb makes the comment, since when does our best team include AP5, Chopper, and Wedge? And you can see Hera's face where she's like, don't say anything.
You know, here's the thing is,
I got so much joy out of this episode. But
I think it's also because the rest of the, you know, crew of the Ghost, just they're tired of Chopper's sass, if you will. You know, he is the ultimate sass bucket. I think he's dethroned R2-D2 at this point for it.
I love him so much.
Chopper's good. But yes, so you're right. So Wedge, AP5, and Chopper go on the secret mission to go and steal the current, I guess it's codes, you know, the transmission codes, so they can get, you know, go to Lothal, which is coming up soon, obviously.
Yes. But
they're intercepted by controller LT-319, which we'll talk about him in a second, but he's working for Thrawn, and Thrawn has issued a press release or a notification to his agents that they are being infiltrated by Rebel spy droids. And sure enough, Chopper has been identified because of his many times of sneaking into Imperial bases as a Rebel spy droid. And this starts all the fun that we have in the rest of this episode. What do you think of controller LT-319? You know, he has the, besides who voices him, which we'll talk about in a second.
Damn it! I was going to talk about that immediately, because the second I heard the voice, I had so much joy over hearing it. I got so excited, because I was like, is that Josh Gad? It's Josh Gad. Oh my god, okay, it's so Josh Gad. I literally Gad being, went straight to
controller LT-319. Yes. Yeah. So yes, it was Josh Gad. And here's the thing is, what's really cool about this character in general, is this character wears the same headgear that Lobot wore in Empire Strikes Back and Zeebo wore in the first season of Star Wars Rebels, which is this kind of connected to the Star Wars internet matrix, if you will, of all the Imperial information that's going through the Imperial network. And so he's kind of an interesting character, because you see his hunger and desire to, like, be able to capture and control and find out where the Rebels are through Chopper. But at the same time, he's also completely connected to, you know, all the other people in the same room and all of the Imperial network. So he's not really a robot, but he's not really a person. He's kind of interesting character. And yes, it was voiced by Josh Gad.
Yeah, which was incredible, and I loved it. I really liked it. It also shows, within the hierarchy of the Empire, how much sway and influence Thrawn not only has, but also, like, either way, going down to people below him on the sort of command chain, but also above him, because people are very obviously seeking to please him and do things in order to curry favor with him, probably because he has a lot of influence with potentially moving along their career. So it was really interesting to see a character outside of a crew that Thrawn is directly interacting with, or a ship that he's directly interacting with, where they're still seeking to please him.
He is a Grand Admiral, so it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I know that, but it's just, it's really interesting that you can see Thrawn's influence across, like, across the Empire without him needing to be there. And I think that just reinforces his position within the Empire as this huge symbol of just, like, everything. So it kind of just reinforces Thrawn's position for me. So even though it is what is classed as this filler episode, I feel like it had some really nice beats that just reinforce things that have been set up through the season already. So I really like that, and I just thought it was really interesting, this idea of a lot of the time Chopper is used to infiltrate and subvert technology within the Empire and is able to manipulate it and use it for their means in their mission, versus controller LT-319 being able to hijack that and turn it against them. Like, I love that sort of subversion of them being one step ahead this time when it came to being able to hijack Chopper and take control of him and turn him against the crew of the Ghost, essentially, and these rebel infiltrators, when it is something that they weren't expecting, particularly the fact that Chopper is almost an icon now within the Ghost crew of, like, being the most steadfast and reliable, I feel, a lot of the time. So it was just a really nice subversion of, like, how they can turn that technology against them, and a reminder that it can go both ways.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest
thing. Because a lot of the time we see it only used in respect of the crew of the Ghost and the Rebellion, that they always have the upper hand when it comes to using technology against the Empire. But it was finally a moment where they managed to turn that back against them, almost like as just like this dark reminder that they aren't always going to have the upper hand when it comes to technology. There are people out there and working within the Empire that can turn that against them as well. So I found there was a lot that was really interesting in this episode for me.
It was definitely one of my more favorite episodes, especially it being a filler episode, quote unquote. Also, Wedge was really good on the mission. He did absolutely nothing, which, you know, at the same time, you know, sometimes that's what you have to do. AP5 is the one who was able to get the codes. Chopper obviously got compromised. I will say, I don't think it was just Wedge who did not recognize that he should have caught something more, because he did, you know. I think my favorite line was Wedge is like, I need to go to the refresher, which is now canon, which we'll talk about in a second. And AP5 is like, oh, brilliant. So now we can talk privately. And, you know, AP5 just shows up while he's trying to, you know, go to the bathroom, which is really, first of all, to me, is really funny. And the downside is he really doesn't listen to AP5 at this point. Like, if he did, I would have given him a lot more credit. But at this point, he didn't, and I was a little sad.
No. And, I mean, that was the bit where I was like, that's where things are really difficult, because we were told at the top of the episode that AP5, and yeah, okay, regardless of your feelings about AP5, he was in charge of the mission. He was put in charge of that mission because he had the most information about it. Not only about the people who were on the mission with them, but the base that they were going to. So he was in charge. Now, when a commanding officer, a superior officer, or the person in charge of a mission comes to you with concerns about potentially a compromised droid or something not being quite right within the mission, you don't ignore it, particularly if that person is in charge of the mission. Regardless of your feelings about them or your feelings about droids or whatever. So that brushing AP5 off.
But they all did it. It wasn't just Wedge.
Except for Hera. Hera was the only one who kind of...
She did too, but in the end, she saw.
To an extent, Hera did pretty much immediately get this feeling that something wasn't quite
She's
right.
She's like, yeah. While I agree. Hera instantly saw, when he was trying to get the hyper, space logs and stuff. She's like, Chopper, I wipe all that stuff after every jump with you. Like things that, he was doing something that it was off.
Yeah. But the thing is that if Wedge had taken AP5 seriously at that point, when AP5 had brought up those concerns while they were en route back, it wouldn't have got as far as it had.
That's true.
Because they could have sent a message to Hera and the rest of the crew ahead of time, and they could have been one step ahead. Instead of being five steps behind and things going from bad to worse. It frustrated me because it doesn't matter how you feel about your commanding officer on a personal level. If you are involved in a rebellion the way that you are, you put personal feelings aside for the greater good.
I agree. I do want to talk a little bit about the refresher term that was used. I love how Rebels is slowly bringing back canon stuff. It really makes me happy. Even though refresher is probably a non exciting thing, it was used previously in the EU for a term that was meant to say, instead of using the word bathroom. So,
They used refresher or fresher. They tended to use, which is, it feels more, as a term, it feels more military. Mm-hmm. So it was something that I quite liked from Legends. So it was really cool to hear it pop up in Rebels. So that was something that I was like, oh, this is neat. I quite like this, especially because we haven't heard it since Legends. So I really quite like that.
Yeah, so it was just something fun. I liked having that. I do want to say, with the moments between AP5 and Chopper, when they're outside the ship and Chopper's coming at AP5 with his guns, which was kind of entertaining. Yes. And then,
good segue because this episode I think had the single greatest moment in Rebels for me. Which was Chopper and AP5 basically doing the anything you can do, I can do better song from Annie Get Your Gun. I love that so much. I have no words. Because that's one of my, as a musical piece, that's one of my favorites. I love it, especially when you have... two characters who are quite, not antagonistic, but they tend to butt heads quite a lot because of personality clashes. So you see this song used in those instances quite a lot. So I had to pause the episode like another listener who who mentioned it.
Yeah.
You saw that as well. I also had to pause it because I was laughing so much. So I'm right there with you. I thought it was great.
I'll say was very good. What's really funny is in this, obviously the bickering between the two of them, and then obviously Chopper even got his guns, which was obviously
I know. I thought that was a really neat little.
But I mean, it
depends. It depends on if you follow musicals or you're familiar with musicals, because I don't feel like that's an or the gun reference back with Chopper at the end, I don't feel like that would have been obvious to everyone. So people who may have known about the, like, anything you can do, I can do better, that thing, I get a lot of people will know that, but I don't know that they would know that it's from the musical Annie Get Your Gun. So, for me, that was a really great moment, because I was like, that is so clever, and I want to know who decided to put that in, because it's so good.
If you watch this week's Rebels Recon, it's one of those things where not only does Dave Filoni talk about this, but he also goes on to, at the end, you have AP5 starting to sing about just being...
Yes, so it, so, I love
so
that
for the
well.
First time ever, we have a Star Wars official musical where we have AP5 floating in the abyss in silence and like finding Nirvana. And it's really funny. And Dave Filoni mentioned that people were asking, like, are we really going to have AP5 sing this? Like, is this a real thing? He's like, yeah, I think it'll be funny. You know, if you want, you know, honestly, AP5's character would be, it's all quiet and he'd be alone. And until his battery died, he'd probably start to catalog and organize all the stars that are around him, which is what he wants to do. And he's disappointed when this ghost decides to scoop him up and save him. He's like, no.
I know. That was so funny. I love that as well.
All right.
Can I give a shout out to my MVP line for the whole episode? Because I loved it. It was AP5 when he said, oh, Lieutenant Antilles, you are mistaking my attention to detail for an attack on your obviously fragile ego.
Oh, boy.
I love that line so much.
So much in his ego. Anyway.
I mean, what can I say? I am AP5. AP5
okay,
is me.
Yes, you are. All right. And last bit before we move on to our spotlight topic, we do have a listener comment about last week's live show. So Mark Koop said, listening right now, the who's hotter question is easy. For him, it's Poe. And honestly, who doesn't like Poe and his little shimmy that he does in the Force Awakens outtakes?
Who doesn't love Poe and his everything? Like I said, I would prefer a Poe Luke sandwich. Gosh. Like that would be my ideal. But no, I can't choose between Poe and Luke. Like that's really difficult.
We still haven't talked
me.
About the is it the old man Luke or the. You know,
I mean, not gonna lie, it doesn't really matter for me.
All right.
So it could be either.
All right.
Both.
Let's move on to our spotlight topic. Our spotlight topic is an interview with Jay Mercado from ILM. First of all, tell us who you are. You know, your name, what you do at ILM, or you know, kind of what you did to get to where you are now.
Well, shoot, there's a long history to that. But first off, my name is Jay Machado. I'm a senior hard surface modeler at ILM. And, God, it's been a long journey to get where I am. I studied illustration in college and, kind of couldn't find work after that. So I went to visual effects school and worked on a few things and eventually landed at ILM. And yeah, I worked on EP7. Well, first I worked on Transformers and Noah, and then I got onto EP7 and then Rogue One. And yeah.
So now, are you working on Last Jedi also or no?
I'm filling in for the supervisor who broke his arm. So what? I'm kind of touching it, but I'm not really hardcore working on it. It's more a couple hours a day while I'm currently at actually working on Transformers the last night.
Okay.
For the time being, I'm supposed to go on to the Millennium Falcon ride eventually.
Very cool. Cool. Yep. All right. So obviously, Jay, I knew you in high school and you knew I had a love for Star Wars back then. What about history with Star Wars? Now that you're, obviously working on the films, how's it feel to work on these huge films that, millions and millions of fans just love and adore?
Well, I mean, if I could go back and tell the 8-year-old version of me that I'd be doing this, he'd probably drop dead and it would be this
big time paradox or whatever. But I got first, actually my first introduction to Star Wars was the Sega Game Gear game. And it's kind of funny. Like, I didn't know anything about the movie, and they had these cutscenes in the game that weren't really related. And I remember seeing Obi-Wan. I didn't know he was Obi-Wan at the time. And he's like, oh, I don't remember owning a droid or whatever. And then the next cutscene you see is Han, and Chewie says, you're looking for passage to Alderaan. So I thought, oh, okay, so the old man's name is Chewie. And, you know, it was totally weird. And then eventually, you know, I'm like, you know, I got to watch this movie. And I mean, I think I was like 8 or 9 or something, but I was a little late to the game, but I watched and just instantly loved it. It's just, yeah. And then, I mean, I've always been into, you know, more of the ships and technology. I had all those cross-section cutaway books when I was a kid, and it's just funny. Like, I never thought I'd end up working on spaceships for a living, because I always wanted to do animation and stuff like that. But it's been a crazy journey, and now here I am working on spaceships for Star Wars.
I mean, I did 2D traditional animation at university, and I, much like you did, I found it very difficult to find work coming out of school, particularly because it was such a traditional format of creativity, and it just the work wasn't there for it. How did you find the transition from going from like a very, very traditional set of creating and creativity to then going more into the visual effects side of things?
Well, it kind of went like this. I took my first traditional animation class, and I was like, you know, you do the thousands of drawings and then you film it, which takes forever. And then you play it back and it's like, that was like 10 seconds. Oh my God. So I was like, I gotta shift gears. 'Cause my whole thing is I have stories in my head that I want to tell. So I kind of shifted from animation to, oh, maybe I'll do comics. I've always loved comics. I'll get into illustration. And I kind of did that for a bit. And then I found out about this tool called ZBrush. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's a 3D sculpting program. And I was like, oh, this is going to make making comics way easier. I just have to make the characters and pose them. And then I actually bought it. It was like, I had to save up for a couple months, and I bought this expensive program. And then I got in there and I could sculpt fine. And it was fun, but there were things I couldn't do. Like I was making like a Batman character, and I wanted to make like a belt, and it set something that's very, you know, like hard edges. And I couldn't really do it in there. So, I did some research and I found out about this program called Maya, which is the program I use every day now. And, I could do it in there, but it was like the student version, and I couldn't export anything. And it was this big thing. And, I was like, you know what? I need to just, you know, reevaluate my life. I've been out of school for 2 years and I'm not really finding work. I was working at Target at the time. And, I found this school called Noman, which is in Hollywood. It's Noman School of Visual Effects. And I went there for an open house, and it instantly knew. I was like, this is where I need to be. This is, I mean, all the stuff I wanted to learn in college, like, it's all on the wall here, and it's where I need to be. So I took out some loans and went through that. It was like a 2.5 year program. And learned visual effects, I mean, pretty much 100% there. And, I just fell in love with it. Especially modeling. It's like, you know, I used to build model kits as a kid, and this is like the next step for that, really, the next phase of that evolution, you know?
So I have a question. Like, when you go, so obviously you worked on Noah and all these films that you've worked on. Mm-hmm. When you go see them in the theater, do you just go like, hey, I made that? Like, kind of just be like, I remember doing that.
It's, you know, it's different. I mean, you look at movies differently. Like, I watched Jungle Book recently because, you know, it's Oscar nomination and stuff. And all I see is like, wow, that's a lot of work. It's not, it's not even, I just appreciate the visuals more now. I can see something like Transformers, which is like, you know, probably not going to be a very good movie, but yeah, you know, I can watch it and be like,
and appreciate the work that went into it.
Yeah, exactly. It's even something like Jupiter Ascending or something. I'm like, wow, that's a pretty neat idea or interesting design, even though the movie's a crap. But
hey,
what?
I have this really weird soft spot for Jupiter Ascending. I'm not really? Gonna lie.
Yeah,
I mean, roller skating in the air. I was just like, what? He's like a wolf with wings. I don't. It was just very bizarre.
Bees, come on.
Yeah. It was just cool seeing like Sean Bean not die in a movie.
That is very true.
Yeah,
that is so true.
So. What was I'm a little off. I feel like I'm off the train. What was the question again?
I don't know if we had a question there, other than just when you actually no. The question was, when you go see movie, like, do you recognize like, oh, I did this? You definitely mentioned that you watch films differently. My wife hates watching films with me because, like you, I went to college for film, and right after school, I got a job at Nickelodeon, and then I moved way out and I stopped doing that. But even then, like, I have friends that work at Stereo D and stuff like that, so when I watch the films that they've done, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what shot that is, because that one's one she worked on. And just like, it's weird being able to look at things and appreciate things from a different perspective. I feel like it almost takes away from the film sometimes. Do you ever notice that?
I mean, especially like something like Rogue One, I could not shield myself from it. I had to go in and watch all the sequences, and like way in advance. I just couldn't resist. And so there's that aspect of it where nothing is a surprise. Or rather, I get the surprise way early. But I think in the theater, it's more about like seeing it with people and kind of like watching them watch it in a way. Like, if I see it with my coworkers, we kind of like look at each other and go, yeah, like that was awesome. Like, I saw your model in there. But if I see it with like a family member, I'm just like watching them react, So, because it's like I've seen the visual over and over, and I don't really need to watch it in the theater. I kind of just like, oh, wasn't that cool? And just that type of a thing.
Do you get a lot of questions from your family, like as you're working on stuff, like if they know what you're working on? Do they ask you a lot of questions about what you're working on?
They know that I'm not really allowed to talk about it, so they really don't. I mean, my parents were never into Star Wars. They kind of just they're kind of into it now in like a my son worked on that kind of way. But they've never really been fans. I was kind of raised more on Star Trek, actually. Mm-hmm. But my brother. I'm close with my brother, and a lot of times my conversations with him are more about venting, like, oh man, they need to fix this shot. It's going to suck. They need to redo it, or, stuff like that. But other than that, it's more like just getting people hyped. It's more like, oh yeah, I saw, I've seen it all and it's going to be good. There's never really specific questions, Like, if someone were to ask me, who is the last Jedi? I mean, I...
All right, so here, you don't have to say anything, but... without saying it. Hold on. Without saying anything, can you confirm that Luke is Rey's father? If you don't say anything, you confirmed it. All right, good. We got it all right here. Confirm that Luke is Rey's father. All right, that's all I need to hear. And I wasn't actually going to do that on this interview, but the fact that you brought up who's the last Jedi, I had to.
Yeah, Mikey had it in here as like a joke question, because Mikey is Mikey.
Well, obviously, I can't answer, so.
I know.
You didn't have to answer. That was the point. I got it. Cool. Don't worry. It'll be just between us. No one else will know. I promise.
Yeah, it's kind Luke of, yeah, I think it's funny how, like, people are taking it as like, oh, the trilogy, the titles are going to be a sentence, like The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, from his nap or whatever.
Yeah. Everyone's seen that meme, from his nap, exactly.
Yeah.
when it comes to actually keeping secrets, though, because obviously if you do speak to someone who, well, like Mikey, who can't help himself, yeah. measures do you need to take in order to ensure that things, like, stay a secret? Because I know, like, when I go to places like New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con, and they show, and even Star Wars Celebration when I went there, when you sit down and look at some of, like, the trailers that they release a little early, or they'll release early footage or clips and stuff like that, when they dim the lights, they go around with, like, infrared goggles and stuff to make sure that people aren't recording stuff and don't have their phones out. Like, is there, like, a process that you have to go through to ensure that, like, things don't because accidents happen, like, things don't accidentally get out there?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, it is stressful sometimes. I find that, like, I really have to stay on top of the news that gets out there. I remember when we have, like, this software that basically is like a database for all our reference when we're working on stuff. And I remember when the Force Awakens concept art, like, kind of hit the internet, I had some of that art up on my screen, and there was this moment of, oh shit, like, did I do something? Like, you know, because you do kind of freak out. You don't want to be the one, you know, who accidentally does something. So I really stay on top of what's out there, so I know what I can talk about. And yeah, it is tough. But I mean, the best way is just to really not talk about it, you know? Just
so
stop yourself. Even if the information's out there, you can kind of be like, I can't really say, you know.
So my question is, you worked on things like Noah and Transformers before you moved on to Star Wars. You're working on Transformers again right now. Do you have fans come and ask you things about those films versus more the Star Wars films?
You know, it's kind of my internet presence isn't very strong, and I kind of like it that way. I most of the people that contact me asking about stuff like that are students that are interested in getting into the business, and they've found my profile or whatever on my school website or something, or they've seen my reel and they're interested in that way. It's not really like random people finding out, you know, or seeing them wearing a piece of crew gear at the store and seeing that doesn't really happen. But yeah, the students are more interested in like, oh, this is like my dream job. You're working there. And how do I get to that level? And it's mostly advice about that rather than, like, you know, asking about specifics about films. Cause I think people know I can't really talk about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. How much time does it take to complete a major sequence in the film from start to finish?
I'm kind of like at the beginning of the pipeline where I'm working on assets. So I don't really do like specific sequences. It's more like, if I do work on a shot, it's going to be like model correctives where, oh, this piece is intersecting and we need to move it, or we need to sculpt some damage. The shot in Rogue One where the Star Destroyer comes down through that shield gate, and you see all the panels busting off. That was a lot of work that I did, and that's more of what I do in shot. But even that was maybe a couple weeks of work. But I mean, obviously, somebody did the layout for the shot, somebody animated it, somebody did the lighting, and, you know, there's a lot more that goes in. It's not like one person per thing.
Yeah, you're not the finished compositor of everything.
No, I'm really just, I'm my job is like I'm building the toys that people play with down the line, you know?
Yeah. So it's really just you're just really growing up and doing the same thing you did as a kid, then, is what you're telling me, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And it's really can't
a little bit more complicated than Lego kits.
It is. I mean, you have to build the pieces,
but
after that it's after the pieces are built is fun. I don't know if you've seen John Knoll talked I think it was last year at Celebration, he talked about the archaeology. It was some archaeology panel, and he talked about recreating all the model kit parts. And so we had this library of model kit parts from the 70s, like obviously digital. And a lot of my job is making stuff look cool with those parts. So it's almost like kit bashing, or just building Lego, really.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to, like, building stuff, though, is it difficult? Like, particularly with Rogue One, in where it comes in the Star Wars sort of timeline, was it difficult to go back and match the style and the feel and the look of the original trilogy versus, obviously, the work that you would have done on Force Awakens, which is further along in the timeline?
Well, honestly, Rogue One I found easier because it was so familiar to me. I mean, the classic X-Wing, the classic Star Destroyer, it's kind of like burned into my brain a little bit. Whereas like something like The Force Awakens, it's like new designs. And a lot of times I'm like, wow, that doesn't feel Star Wars to me. And you kind of have to work with the new aesthetic, you know, and it like the First Order, it's a lot more like brutalist architecture. It's kind of like, it's a different style than the Empire. So it's honestly more challenging to do not Star Wars-y stuff, you know, mm-hmm. because I mean, I know like the Millennium Falcon inside and out at this point, and I've modeled it like twice in my life. And it's just like, I getting away from that is more difficult for me.
It's almost like creating the new normal for Star Wars. When you go forward with like The Force Awakens, you're creating the new style of yeah. Star Wars. It's creating that new iconography that yeah. people maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, that may be like what they see as Star Wars. So that, I guess that's, is that a little daunting thinking about it in that respect?
Well, I mean, a lot of that stuff is designed in art department. So I don't do a whole lot of design work. It's more like executing the design. But there is that. I mean, I think back to like the prequels and like how those designs were so different from anything we've seen, but now they're kind of like, they are Star Wars, you know? And I mean, like something like the Naboo fighter is nothing like anything we saw in the original trilogy. But now, like, if you see the Naboo fighter, you know, it's from Star Wars, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to think that what we're doing now is eventually going to be Star Wars for someone, you know? I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It's a great answer. Jay, what is something about your job that people might not know you do? Like something that's like, oh, as a hard surface modeler, I also do this.
Honestly, it's a lot of file management. It's
are you like your own IT kind of thing too?
Exactly. Like for example, the Star Destroyer is actually constructed as like a set. So it was all these sub assets that I had to keep track of and make sure it's all working, so the riggers, you know, the people who rig the thing can work with it and make sure all the textures are hooked up. And it's a lot more technical than just like creating art or creating an asset or something. So a lot of times I find things come across my desk that it's like, hey, this is on fire and we need you to put it out. That is that type of thing. So I'm not just sitting here making awesome models all day. It's kind of like, it's being a manager, really.
Speaking of what you just mentioned, do you have any particular fond memories from working on the film? Any late nights of looking at, you know, a series of different model parts that you had to keep track of or refiling or something like that?
There was a lot of fun on The Force Awakens just because Roger Guyette, the VFX supervisor, he's hilarious. And we would have big meetings and he would totally lighten the mood with a joke or something. And it was really awesome. And he actually he's working on Ready Player One, but he'll stop by our office once in a while and we'll kind of like chat about, oh, remember when we were on Ep 7 and we were in the trenches? And it's fun. I mean, you really do build camaraderie with your coworkers because there are late nights, there is overtime, you know, there is like, oh, we got to push for the trailer. Like we got to get this stuff done. So there you do build a lot of that camaraderie. As far as like a specific story though, I have to think. I actually had sent a lot of emails. There was a lot of back and forth about the Millennium Falcon turrets in EP7. I mean, obviously, you guys probably know this, but, you know, in A New Hope, the gun turrets hanging from the basically when they're in the gun pits. And in Force Awakens, it's coming up from the bottom of, like, the floor. And that was, like, a big back and forth where I was like, that's not how the Falcon is. And I sent all these emails, and the animation people were like, no, this is how it is now. And it was this big, back and forth. But, yeah, I mean, specific stories. It's really more just everyone bitching about, you know, I got to do this in this amount of time, or the software doesn't work, or the tools don't work, or it's really a lot of that. It's not so much like, you know, well, it's a lot of that. And then every once in a while you realize like, oh yeah, this is Star Wars. This is going to be huge. And you have to kind of remind yourself of that sometimes, but yeah.
So I know, like, you mentioned,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I know you mentioned that you had quite a lot of input from the art director, but did you have it from, you know, the actual directors of either Rogue One or The Force Awakens as well? Did you have much contact, or like very little? Did it all come down the pipeline through the art director?
I did meet Gareth Edwards, but it was kind of like in more of a, we have these things called Ergo Breaks, and it's kind of just like a little kind of get together in the production office, and he was down there, and, you know, we all shook hands and stuff, but I don't really get direct feedback from him. It all gets kind of filtered through the production, you know, but, I didn't get to meet JJ. I did meet his sons, which was interesting. They came by and saw our office. And, one time you guys will have to, if you can make it, I'll give you a tour. But our office, my buddy and I, we're all into 3D printing, so we've got all these 3D prints everywhere, and it's kind of like a stop on the tour at this point. I mean, obviously there are offices that are way crazier than ours, but it's an interesting, you know, thing for people to see all these, you know, especially my buddy, his name's Landis. He's got all these designs and mechs and stuff that he's done and 3D printed. And I mostly have like Batman heads, and I don't, Mikey, you probably remember.
I know all the Batman t-shirts from high school. I remember. So if you could have worked on any previous Star Wars movies, so you mentioned the prequels earlier with the Naboo fighters, and then obviously the original trilogy, if you could have worked on any of the previous Star Wars films, what sequence do you wish you could have done, or what model would you wish you would have created? And this is like from all the films, you know, the prequels, the original trilogy, whether it was with CGI or like you actually doing a hand model or something like that.
That's a good question. I mean, obviously all of us wish we could have worked on the originals. I would have loved to see just see the Millennium Falcon set. I know they have a new one, but it's not as good. In my opinion, I think
they don't make them like they used to, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Empire Strikes Back Millennium Falcon set, I would die to go see that. But as far as like a model I wish I had worked on, I was always a big fan of that first one you see in Phantom Menace, that Republic cruiser. I always liked that design. I thought it was like kind of a riffing on the Blockade Runner a little bit, but it was a cool looking ship. Yeah, I also like the General Grievous fighter, because it's kind of just sitting there when Obi-Wan and Grievous are fighting. But I like the design of that. It's kind of got like a World War II aesthetic. Yeah. I always like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. What about other movies or franchises? If there was another one, like any one that you could have worked on or could work on, what would all?
I haven't gotten to touch anything from Star Trek, and like I said, I was kind of more raised on Star Trek. I'm a big Trekkie as well as a Star Wars fan, but it would be cool to work on the Enterprise. And I mean, here's the thing, you can work on this stuff at work, and it's cool and you're lucky, but it's kind of like you have to do, you have to produce someone else's vision. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I'll come home and I'll just kind of do my own thing. Like, I was working on the Millennium Falcon for episode 7, but I found so much awesome research on like replica prop forum. And I was like, you know, I hate for this reference to go to waste. So I started building it at home as well. And it's like, it's freeing, you know, you get to do everything your way. And so it's not really limited to like, I would love to work on a Star Trek movie, obviously work on the Enterprise, but nothing's stopping me from building it at home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you prefer to work on the new Trek movies, or would you prefer to work on the TV show that's going to come out this year?
Either would be cool. I like the new Trek movies. I didn't so Same. Much like the second one, but yeah, either one. I don't really like the design of the Discovery for the new TV show. I know it's that Ralph McQuarrie concept, like that wedge shaped ship with the dish and stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, it would be cool to do something for that. I don't know. Honestly, give me a cool spaceship to model, and I will.
Be You'll happy. Do it anyway. Yeah, it's having fun, right?
It is.
So I'm going to ask this hypothetical question, which is not going to happen at all.
Okay.
You know, are you allowed to tell us what Lucasfilm would do to you or ILM would do to you if you accidentally told us everything? Which you're not going to tell us. You're not going to tell us everything. But what would they do to you if you did, like, let the cat out of the bag or something like
you
that?
You mysteriously disappear. Yeah,
I would immediately be fired. I'm not sure what other ramifications there would be, but I wouldn't want to be fired, so that's enough for me.
Okay, that's good.
Lucasfilm Inquisitors would be sent after.
I'm just imagining, you know, like this person in a cloak coming in and you just never showing up again anywhere else. it was just wondering, you know, like I said, I get to ask the dumb questions, you know, the questions about who is the Last Jedi, you know.
Are you sure you don't mean who are?
Yeah, we know it is plural. We know it's plural. You know,
the
translations,
plural,
the translations to give it away. Every time there's something like that, the translations always give it away.
Yeah, so, I think it's so funny how you know there's so much mystery around it, and people get all in. It's like almost like the speculation is more rampant than the actual information.
Well, that's what it is. We're a weekly Star Wars podcast. Guess what we do every week? So
right.
You're talking about I'm preaching the choir
feeds
here.
Us.
Yeah, it's and you guys. I'm sure you guys watch that Star Wars show and everything. And
oh yeah, every week. So Jay, is there anything else you would like us to know, or you'd like to just put out there for the interview process here?
I don't know. I mean, go see Star Wars, guys. Rogue One on Blu-ray. I don't know. It's like,
yeah, Rogue One's coming out soon, right? So yeah.
Yeah, I think in April, right? I'm excited for that because yeah, I loved Rogue One. I was so happy to like had all the space battles and the stuff that I felt
phenomenal.
Like. Yeah, all the stuff I felt was missing from F7, like. It was in Rogue One, and I loved it. It was great. K2SO was awesome. My friend Landis, who I mentioned earlier, he's actually modeled K2SO.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't work on the movie long enough to end up in the credits, so I would like...
Oh, that's so gutting!
Yeah, I would like... He also modeled BB-8, but he actually won awards for that, so he's gotten the credit for BB-8. So he's like kind
good.
Of... He's kind of become the droid guy, but... I've kind of become the ship guy, but
that's good. So yeah. Are your offices nearby each other? The droid
we
guy and the ship
right
guy
next,
nearby?
Right next to each other, yeah.
There you go.
That's great. Oh, it's always so like when you don't do enough work to make the credits, that's got to be heartbreaking.
It really is sad. And then like you see even the people who like sweep up the stages and stuff get the credits and, you know, all the, there's just so many VFX artists that we're limited to this small slot. You just get lost in the sea of names sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was a little bummed about that. And, you know, I'm a little bummed for him because, I mean, K2SO is a huge, awesome part of the movie and, you know, that's all him. So what are you going to do?
Wow. It's just how the industry works currently.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if we put everyone who worked on the film, like literally everyone, the credits would be as long as the film. Movie. Or yeah. They could do like what they do at the end of like TV shows. Like I remember the first time I saw my name on TV and like they sped up the credits. I'm like, I didn't even see my name. Like it was like less than a second. It was on there for 5 seconds because I made the credits at the end. But yeah. Apparently I'm gone. You know, so it would definitely be kind of ridiculous putting every VFX artist and every intern that I know works with you guys and stuff like that where
that makes into the film. IT guys who support us often don't make the cut. It's just there's a lot of people who work on the film or contribute in some way that don't make it up there.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Danya, Jay? Anything that I can't ask any more bad jokes or any bad questions?
No. I could, but
I'm not going to do that, Danya. You told me I can't ask too many, otherwise I'll get in trouble, so I'm not going to. Anything else, though, guys?
No. Except to say thank you to Jay for joining us. Really appreciate you taking some time out.
Any last things, Jay? Is there any portfolios or anything you want us to link to in our show notes or anything like that?
I mean, I have a blog. If you kind of just search for my name, it's a blog spot. I also have another blog that's kind of like, it's kind of, I don't want to say secret, but I'm not trying to promote it. If you know what I mean, I want people to kind of discover it. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you look for it and try and discover it.
I was going to say, it's like a scavenger hunt online.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, I've kind of built a somewhat of a relationship with some people on the RPF, which is Replica Prop Forum, if you don't know. And they're super into just kind of the history and recreating some of these studio scale models and stuff. And it's kind of like they've all discovered my second blog, but I think the average person wouldn't know what to look for. So I'm going to be as cryptic as possible and see if you
can. I love this. I'm like, I'm going to go and like exercise my Google foo now.
Honestly, it won't be that hard to find. But
okay.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, like I said, I don't have a huge online presence and I kind of like it that way. I mean, there's some people that I work with who are posting all over ArtStation all the time and, you know, doing awesome personal work and putting it on Facebook and stuff. But I'm really not into that so much. I mean, like on Instagram, I'll post pictures if like I'm working on like a real model kit or something, or I actually got like one of those Millennium Falcon toys and I painted it all, try to make it look all nice, and I'll post stuff like that or Batman cowl stuff. But, like the 3D work, I really don't put much out there other than like, you know, the occasional demo reel.
Yeah. You know, I do want to ask you this just because I know how much you love Batman. Did you see Lego Batman by chance?
I did. And I loved it.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't like projecting that you loved Lego Batman like I did. So
it was awesome. That was the first time I really enjoyed Robin. Which is kind of cute, because I normally think Robin is super lame.
Yeah, I can understand that. All right, well, well, thank you for joining us, Jay. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It was my pleasure.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Ben.
Thank you. And please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradio. Also, don't forget to check out Patreon at resistanceradio.net/Patreon. And may the force be with you.
And also with you.